found the number one internet site for irreverent, cool, and entertaining talk programming. It's LA Talk Radio. We say what we want.
You're listening to the Maria Sanchez Show on LA Talk Radio and MariaSanchezShow.com. The Maria Sanchez Show. Current events, newsmakers, lifestyle, health, relationships, entertainment. Miss a day? Download the podcast at LA Talk Radio and MariaSanchezShow.com.
Good morning. This is Maria Sanchez, and welcome to the Maria Sanchez Show, her daily, weekdays, we should say, on LATalkRadio.com live. And then we post the podcasts, if you will, on our website, themariasanchezshow.com, for you to listen at your leisure. There are free apps that you can download where you are able to listen on your iPhone or your tablet or your Android. So basically, you can take us wherever you need to be, and that's the beauty of internet radio. You don't have to be constrained to your car or to your home or to your computer or whatever. We're more portable and we're mobile. It's Tuesday, April 30th, the last day of April. Tomorrow's May Day. And the top five stories that you need to know, and then we've got two different guests for the program today. One is that there's female DNA has been found on at least one of the bombs used in the Boston Marathon attacks. So the authorities haven't determined whose DNA it is or whether its presence means that a woman helped the two brothers suspected in the bombings. And they said that there could be multiple explanations for that. It could have come, for example, they say, from a store clerk who handled the materials used in the bombs or a stray hair that ended up in the bomb. But yesterday, the FBI visited the Rhode Island home of the parents of Catherine Russell, who is the widow of Tamerlan Tsarnaev, who's the elder brother who is obviously was killed. He died after a shootout with the police 4 days after the bombings. And apparently they gathered DNA sample from her. And they said that was the culmination of days of negotiations. FBI officials have been negotiating with her attorneys in recent days to gain fuller access to questioning her. And yesterday I heard a comment from one of the newscasters saying that she's lawyered up. And why would somebody who's innocent do that? So that's going to be interesting to see what she testifies or why or whatever. So they also yesterday, the United States and Russian authorities said that they're trying to find out just exactly what the elder Tsarnaev brother did while he stayed in Russia from January to July of 2012. That created a unique situation, or fairly unique. The President Barack Obama phoned Russian President Vladimir Putin, and they spoke yesterday and agreed to boost anti-terror cooperations. And then President Obama had a news conference earlier this morning, and he said, because one of the reporters asked how forthcoming are the Russian authorities, he said, fairly, although there's still some concerns that go back to the Cold War and suspicion, so we're working on kind of making that be a thing of the past. So that's the latest on the Boston bombing stories that you need to know about. And then what made big news yesterday, which I'm so happy to be able to say that this is going to be the last time we have to say something like this. Whenever you hear the first blah, like the first woman newscaster to anchor the nightly news, the first black whatever attorney general for the state of California, the first whatever. So as time goes on, we won't having to say this, but we'll say the first pro sport player. And they talk about the four major teams, which is the NBA, the NFL, the NHL, and the MLB, so basketball, football, hockey, and baseball, to come out and claim that he's gay. So his name is Jason Collins. He is 34 years old. He has played for 12 seasons. Right now he's a free agent. He was raised in Los Angeles. He attended Stanford University with his twin brother, whose name is Jaron. He roomed with U.S. Representative Joe Kennedy, Democrat out of Massachusetts, and he admitted yesterday that he was gay. So I can't imagine, and it's coming out in an article that's being published in Sports Illustrated that's going to hit the newsstands next week. You can download the article. I did that early this morning and read it. It's really in-depth. And the poor guy, I always feel so badly that you have to hide who you are and how you are and how you feel because people won't accept you. And he said that he noticed he was... He was born first. Nobody knew that his mom was carrying twins. So out comes a 7-pound, 1-ounce boy, and 8 minutes later comes a 7-pound, 4-ounce boy. That would be Jaron, his brother. And he says, you know, there were twins, and they played basketball together. Jason is 7 feet tall. I don't know how tall his brother is. And he said he noticed the difference in their teenage years with his brother's attraction to females that he didn't share. And he mentioned that he dated women early on. He actually even got engaged because that's what he thought he needed to do in order to, you know, be passed for normal or whatever. And part of the story is interesting is that he came out to his aunt first, excuse me, last year, who's in San Francisco. Let me get the, sorry, Aunt Terry is her name, a Superior Court judge in San Francisco. And her reaction surprised me. I've known you were gay for years, she said. And he says in his article, from that moment on, I was comfortable in my own skin. In her presence, I ignored my censor button for the first time. She gave me support. The relief I felt was a sweet release. Imagine you're in the oven baking. Some of us know and accept our sexuality right away, and some need more time to cook. I should know. I baked for 33 years. So that was last year he came out to her. Then he came out to his an uncle in New York who is gay, and he said his uncle has a partner and they've been in a stable relationship forever, so he thought, you know, that's obviously somebody that would. And then he didn't come out to his brother until last summer, and he said his reaction to my breakfast revelation was radically different from Aunt Terry's. He was downright astounded. He never suspected. So much for twin telepathy. But by dinner that night, he was full of brotherly love. For the first time in our lives, he wanted to step in and protect me. Because he claimed, because he was 8 minutes older, he always treated his brother like a kid brother, a younger brother that he wanted to protect. So he protected him from his homosexuality. So apparently, Twitter was all a flutter with this yesterday. Excuse me. He got a whole lot of support from folks, including President Obama called him, which I think is amazing, to express his support and say he was impressed by his courage. All sorts of people weighed in on this. In February, ESPN basketball analyst Chris Broussard said the Bible calls homosexuality a sin. That's one of the few dissenters. NBA Commissioner David Stern said that Collins is widely respected in the league. Quote, we are proud he has assumed the leadership mantle on this very important issue. The Washington Wizards president, which is the last team he paid for, is extremely proud of Jason and support his decision to live his life proudly and openly. He has been a leader on and off the court and an outstanding teammate throughout his NBA career. Those qualities will continue to serve him both as a player and as a positive role model for others of all sexual orientations. Great Boston Celtics head coach Doc Rivers called Collins a pro's pro and one of his favorite players he ever coached. Even President Clinton weighed in. He called the announcement an important moment for professional sports and in the history of the lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender community. And U.S. Representative Joe Kennedy said, for as long as I've known Jason Collins, again, they were roommates at Stanford, he has been defined by three things: his passion for the sport he loves, his unwavering integrity, and the biggest heart you will ever find. I'm proud to stand with him today and proud to call him a friend. So the two of them are going to be marching in the Gay Pride Parade in Boston, which is on June 8th. And Jason Collins said that when he heard that his friend, former classmate, and Representative Joe Kennedy had marched in the parade last year, that he was envious because he wouldn't have been able to do it at that time. He hadn't come out. He said he was even afraid to have gone to be there in support because he would have been asked questions that he would have to give half-truths to. And now he won't have to do any of that. So the first active player to be able to come out. And now they're saying that there's about four NFL players that are going to be coming out too. So hopefully there will be a good acceptance of that as well. Because, of course, homosexuality is a part of who somebody is. The other three stories that we won't be able to get to until later in the program is that living in the United States raises your risk of allergies, and that tomorrow begins May, as we mentioned, and that's National Mental Health Month. We've got a guest on later this hour that's going to be speaking with us about that. And Catherine Zeta-Jones is in the news today because of her. She checked herself into a treatment facility for her bipolar condition, so we'll brush basically up on that. And the our first guest this morning is Rod Williams. He is the CEO of the National Council on Alcoholism and Drug Dependence, and he's going to be visiting us as soon as he answers the phone.
Good morning, Maria.
Good morning, Rod Williams, CEO of NCADD, the National Council on Alcoholism and Drug Dependence. Thank you for taking the time to visit with us this morning. I appreciate it, Rod.
And oh, you're very welcome, Maria. Thank you for having me.
You're welcome. Rod is the CEO of the National Council on Alcoholism and Drug Dependence, and we'll refer to that now as NCADD. And April was alcohol and is Alcohol Awareness Month. And I was curious if you could tell us about your campaign this month and what we need to know about it's the disease, not a character flaw, and the what you can do for our listeners.
Absolutely, Maria. We strongly believe, and we think science backs it up, that alcoholism and drug dependence is a brain disease, and we want to bring attention to that during Alcohol Awareness Month. We want us and all of our affiliates, we want to bring attention to the fact that this is the number one health issue in America today. It's a family disease. It's treatable. That's the good news. It's not a moral weakness, and people can and do recover. In fact, I'm actually living proof of that. I've been in recovery for 31 years myself, and I've been able to see many, many people change their lives through the recovery process. So Alcohol Awareness Month is a way that we can let people know about that through education and awareness. We want to support our different organizations across the country. We have affiliates in every state and in the Virgin Islands. And we want to promote the fact that alcoholism is a treatable disease.
And why do you say it's a family disease?
It's a family disease because every person within the family gets affected by it. The first place that any illness shows up, if you look at any illness like a cancer or diabetes, is within the person's family. The people closest to that person are the ones that are most affected by that person's health issue. Same is true with alcoholism and drug dependence. If I have a family member in my home that's struggling with that, I'm going to be affected by that. I'm going to see the struggles. I'm going to have their behavior and their illness impact my life as well.
Now, drug dependency, I think we might have a better understanding of it because that would be somebody who has an addiction to a substance. And that's probably quantifiable, that you have to take more in order to get the desired results, or you're self-medicating or that sort of thing. Unless, can you elaborate on my brief overview there?
Yes, you're absolutely correct in that assessment of it. What happens with people who begin experimenting, if you will, with any type of narcotic, any type of drug, just to learn the effects of it, can somehow become addicted to it, and it will take more of that substance to give them the required amount that they would need in order to feel what they would feel early on in their substance use. And what happens is, somewhere along the line, the person becomes addicted, and it no longer provides any type of pleasure for them. It basically causes problems in their life, but they don't understand that they are addicted. They think that it's just a wide variety of different types of things, like excuses or I'm just picking the wrong substance, or I can quit anytime I want. It's not really that bad, and the drug starts to take their life from them.
So I didn't realize that the further you get into the throes of addiction, the less effect the substance has on the individual. In other words, it's almost about just reclaiming normal.
You know, that's a good point. It's that people, what people don't understand is that the further they get into addiction, they do need more, but it has less of an impact in terms of getting them high. They end up using trying to feel normal, which can't happen because it's not possible to ingest a chemical into my system to make me feel the way I should feel without the chemical.
But alcohol is different. So what is an alcoholic, for starters?
Well, an alcoholic is someone who we believe that their life is affected in an adverse way in terms of their relationships, their health, their employment, in all those major life areas is affected by alcohol in a negative way, and the person continues to use alcohol in spite of those negative consequences. Alcohol is very similar to drugs because it is a drug. It's a mind-altering substance. It's just in liquid form. So the effects of alcohol and drugs are identical in terms of the downward spiral that happens to a person's life who is affected by it in that way.
But your materials say that alcohol is chronic and progressive. So what does that mean?
Well, chronic is a long-lasting illness. It lasts for many, many years. And progressive is something that gets worse naturally over time. What happens with people who are alcoholics in their early stages, the person's life isn't as devastated as it is as time goes by. It does devastating things to a person's medical condition. It does things to their brain, to their body, to their major organs, to their skin. All types of different medical effects, not to mention the effects on people's relationships and every aspect of their life. And it gets worse the longer a person continues to abuse alcohol.
And what does genetically predisposed mean?
Genetically predisposed means that through the help of science, we've found out and isolated the fact that some people have alcoholism in their families, and it's been passed on to them genetically from their parents. And we have actually found that out to be true in science, and that some people are predisposed to alcoholism more so than others. In terms of in my family, there's a long list of alcoholics in my family, which made me predisposed for alcoholism.
And do you work with Alcoholics Anonymous?
Yes, we do. We work closely with Alcoholics Anonymous. Our program refers our clients to Alcoholics Anonymous on a daily basis. We believe that Alcoholics Anonymous is one, if not the best, outside support system to help people recover from alcoholism.
And can you go back to the creation of the NCADD? Because the history of your founder is pretty interesting, especially for folks who are in the recovery community.
Oh, absolutely. We were founded in 1944 by Marty Mann. Marty Mann was a woman who was actually from a wealthy family, and her own alcoholism caused her to drift away, pretty far away from her family and the privilege that she had. And she found recovery in Alcoholics Anonymous, and she actually worked with the founding fathers of Alcoholics Anonymous, and she herself wanted to be able to help other people like her. She wanted to be able to see that people who actually needed the help could get the help, and she established NCADD. And I'm not sure if she knew it would grow into such a huge organization or not, but I'm sure of this. She had a great heart wanting to help other people, and that's how this whole thing got started. And thanks to her, we're able to work with and help millions and millions of people over the years.
And that her sponsor was the AA co-founder, Bill Wilson.
Absolutely, he was. And that was something that, again, I mentioned that she was with the founding father, which was Bill Wilson, and she was involved in the early stages of Alcoholics Anonymous, which it was a great thing because those people that started it in the beginning, they had vision, and their vision changed the world.
So if somebody listening thinks that they may have a problem or knows of somebody that they think has a problem, what's your approach? How does the NCADD work?
Well, there's many services and there's many types of resources that we have. I would ask the person if they were considering or trying to understand it or ask if they did have a problem. They could go to our website, which is www.ncadd.org. That will give you a test that you could take. There's resources. There's information for resources in your area. You could type in your zip code. It will tell you the closest affiliate to you. There's a phone number on the website. I can also give that out. It's 800-622-2255, and it will give you a great deal of information on all services that can help you determine if you have a problem and where to get help if you do.
And obviously you treat both the alcohol and the substance abuse aspects, so you don't discriminate in that regard?
No, we don't. We treat all alcoholism and drug dependence. We want anyone who has a desire and need to get help to be able to find it, and that's what we exist to do.
Now, are there fees associated with your services?
It depends on the affiliate that a person goes to. Say, for instance, if the affiliate that I work at, we have programs that are based on a person's ability to pay, and also we never turn anyone away for lack of funds. We've been doing that since 1974, and we will, if a person calls us and they want help and they don't have any money, we'll see that they get help anyway.
And what kind of services do you offer? Do you offer counseling? Do you offer intake? Do you offer support groups?
We offer all those services. We offer counseling, intake. We offer assessment. We offer outpatient services, residential services. We have services for women, men. We offer also referrals for people who may not even have a place to live. Sometimes people, due to their addiction, end up homeless. We also offer help for people who are in that situation.
And in terms of volunteers or donors, how can people help?
People can contact us. They can call that number, go to the website that I mentioned earlier. We welcome people who want to make donations to assist in what we're trying to do. And we also welcome those who would love to volunteer their time. We have a large list of people who volunteer. And volunteering can be as much as coming by here and basically just filing papers, or it can be speaking with people, or it can be donating goods and services that you may have, or your time, or your talent that you may have. We're willing and happy to accept all types of volunteer services because we know that people need help in all areas.
We're speaking with the CEO of the National Council on Alcoholism and Drug Dependence, Rod Williams. Do you call it satellite or your offices?
Affiliate.
Affiliates, okay. Is in Long Beach, correct?
Correct.
But since we, obviously, we're on the World Wide Web, so if they're in the United States or the Virgin Islands, they can find an affiliate that's in their area. And then what about worldwide?
Well, worldwide, we're still working on that. If a person contacts us on the web, if we don't have an affiliate close to you, we have such an array of resources that we can refer you to someone that can help you with whatever issue you may be having, if it's alcoholism or drug dependence, or if you're a family member and you have someone that you love or care about and you want them to get help and you just are curious about how that can happen. We have a lot of connections throughout the world that we will be able to assist you.
And Rod, since April is closing today, and it was Alcohol Awareness Month for nationally, can you highlight some of the events that occurred both locally and nationally in terms of raising awareness?
Absolutely. One of the things that we did is we had the first weekend of the month, we had our alcohol-free weekend. We wanted to extend an open invitation to all people in America to engage in the 3 alcohol-free days. People or families who might experience some difficulty or discomfort with that can contact us. Not everyone can do that. It's mainly we want people to become aware of the dangers of alcohol, the dangers of alcohol abuse, binge drinking. Our young people are highly at risk for binge drinking, college-age people, for drinking and driving, our young males and young people in general, and motorcyclists. There's a lot of people that suffer a lot of damage due to that, and we want to bring attention to that. We want to let people know that this doesn't have to continue. It's preventable, and much of what we do is prevention. We want people to know that there's other alternatives that you can do in terms of activities and things that don't involve drinking and driving or drinking, period.
And would you say the most vulnerable are our youth, like teens and early 20-somethings? Or, I mean, I know it affects everybody, but who is your target, if you will?
Well, I would agree that our youth are most vulnerable because if you take a notice of the way alcohol is marketed to people nowadays, the primary use or the primary target for alcohol marketing is young people. It starts for many of us at a young age, and once we get hooked, so to speak, at a young age, it can carry on into our adulthood, into our older years. And so we do want our young people to know that it's a dangerous problem for them. 36 people die every day and 700 are injured in motor vehicle crashes that involve alcohol impaired driver. That's a lot of people that don't have to die. We have a lot of people that I mentioned earlier in college age that do conduct binge drinking, which is a dangerous thing. We want people to realize that alcohol poisoning is a medical emergency. People die from alcohol overdose every day. It's not necessary. So we want people to understand that it's preventable, and our youth is a primary target.
And Rod, do you talk about the effects like of cirrhosis of the liver? You mentioned the skin and that sort of thing, but is that something that you highlight? I mean, I know that would be what, risk avoidance kind of behavior? Like this too,
yes,
could be your liver?
Yes, we want people to know that alcoholism does cause major damage to your major organs, and cirrhosis is one of those. Cirrhosis is incurable. When one person gets that, they can't get rid of it. It's not like getting a cold and it leaves your system in a few days. That's a very serious illness, and people actually die from that. Many people who get cirrhosis, because it's difficult to deal with that, they will be on the list for an organ transplant or a liver transplant, and that's a really, really long list. And many people die on the waiting list because they can't get a liver.
Rod, are there signs that you might be getting it, or are there tests that people can take so that you can staunch it before it actually develops?
Well, I think one of the things that happens, Maria, with people who are chronic alcoholics is they don't take care of their physical health. They don't go to the doctor. They don't get checkups. They don't get those kinds of things that are important so that a doctor can tell them if their liver enzymes are high, if they're having problems with any other type of major organs in their life, like their heart or their lungs or anything that can be associated with alcohol abuse. People don't take care of themselves, and that's a major problem. And when it gets to cirrhosis, then it's really too late. You do want to prevent that, and I think the best way is to get early medical treatment when you think that there may be something going wrong with you.
So you can request a liver enzyme test?
Exactly. What happens is if you go in for a checkup, a doctor will do blood work, and then during that time, they can determine if there's anything going on with your bloodstream or with your liver in terms of if the enzymes are high or anything like that. So I would specifically request that you want to have your liver checked out. If that's a person that's listening that would need that you're concerned that you may have some swelling in your abdomen or any other places where you may not feel right, or maybe your eyes are they're yellow, you could ask your doctor to perform those tests so that you can determine, or he or she may be determining, if you have any kind of liver issue.
If someone doesn't have a health care provider, is that something that you can get through public health or through your organization, or do you refer out for that?
Absolutely, we do. Many of the people that we serve, they don't have health insurance, and we can connect them with advocacy groups that can help them get health insurance. We have public clinics that will provide those services for them at no cost at all. We also, sometimes we even have physicians that will volunteer their time to assist us with that.
So you're an all-around go-to person, it sounds like.
Yes, we are. We try to provide the services for every conceivable need in terms of addiction, because we know that addiction affects every aspect of a person's life. And we want to be able to provide an avenue for them to get the help that they need. And if we can't provide that service, we know someone who can.
And some of your slugs, because I was on your website getting some information, are like faith-filled. There is help, there is hope, there is healing. Addiction can be diagnosed, treatment is available, recovery brings joy. I like the mood and the spirit of your website and the welcome that, you know, thank you for being here. That I thought that stands out from a lot of other organizations. It feels like there's a heart and soul behind it.
Well, our whole mission and the whole reason that me personally, that I got into this type of work, is because I wanted to help other people. And I think that those of us who hung around for a long time, like me, it's been over 30 years I've been doing this, we've hung around. We do it because we have a love and a desire to help other people, and that comes across on our website. I'm glad that you saw that. That's the message that we want to convey. We want to let people know that you're not alone, that there's help available for you, that we're not here to judge you or condemn you or to tell you that you're bad. We're here to give you the help you need, because you're a human being, and every human being deserves a second, third, fourth, fifth, tenth, 20th, 50th chance if that's what it takes. We're here to provide that for you.
Well, it's remarkable. And as far as your national council, are you sanctioned by the government? Are you funded through the federal government?
Well, we get funding from a lot of different sources. We get some grant funds from the federal government, some from our state and local governments. We get funds from some generous people who are independent private donors. Those are all our different funding sources, and we need them and more.
And do you get funded nationally or locally, or the affiliates? You do your own grant writing too? How does that work?
We do. Each affiliate has their own source of funding. We do get some funding from, like I mentioned, our federal government through some grants that they make available. But each different affiliate has to basically take care of their own grant writing and secure their own funding.
That's a lot of responsibility.
Yes, it certainly is.
I was going to say.
As you know, we've been going through some difficult times in our economy, which the funding for our type of programs has went down significantly in the last few years. So we're all struggling trying to maintain our programs that we have because it's difficult right now because the money is not like it used to be.
Well, and in order to keep your doors open and to keep offering the services that you do, not only does that cost, it costs more as time goes on and the people's wallets are tighter. So congratulations on being able to be here still today.
Well, I thank you. I appreciate that. It is tough and it's difficult, but we so strongly believe, and I so strongly believe in what we do, that we're willing to make it work, and we do more with less, and we all pitch in and do our part.
Well, thank you, Rod. Thank you for your time, and thank you for what your organization is doing. I appreciate it.
You're welcome, and thank you for having me, and you have a great day.
And you do the same. And we will put the information that Rod shared on our website so that you can you don't have to worry about worrying, you know, what did he say and where did he go, and et cetera. This is Maria Sanchez, and you are listening to the Maria Sanchez Show right here on LATalkRadio.com. We're going to dial our next guest. This is live raw radio. How do you like that? Because if they call and I can't answer because we're speaking about another topic or another guest, then they have to hang up. So I just said to everybody, I'm going to call you. So our next guest is going to speak with us about another organization because Mental Health Month starts tomorrow and an event, how you can get involved. And he has a very interesting story about how mental health has affected his life. And we're going to talk with him about Catherine Zeta-Jones, who her condition for bipolar disorders in the news today.
Hello.
Dwayne Benson, good morning. This is Maria Sanchez, and welcome to the Maria Sanchez Show this morning. How are you?
I'm good.
Good. Now,
how are you doing, Maria?
I'm excellent, thank you. Thank you for joining us this morning. Dwayne, what does the National NAMI stand for?
It stands for the National Alliance on Mental Illness.
And what is your, obviously you're national, but then you're local. And as I've mentioned before, we try and focus as much as we can on Ventura County that's overlooked. But the county and the folks in it care about what's going on in the state and in the country and in the world. And since you're affiliated with a national organization, anybody who's listening, that's relatable to them. So, and then now May is national, they call it Mental Health Month, National Mental Health Month. So that was the tie-in also, and you've got an event that we wanted to help you promote, which is coming up this weekend. But before we get to the details of that, will you speak about NAMI first, please?
Yeah, some people call it NAMI. Some people call it NAMI. I call it NAMI, and it's a nationwide grassroots organization that what we do is we help people understand mental illness. And there are chapters in just about every county in the United States. Some states are better at it than others. California has 70, 80 some chapters. We're affiliates of the national organization. The national organization is in Virginia. The state organization is in Sacramento. And our affiliate is in Camarillo.
And what do you, when you say help people understand mental illness, what does that mean?
Well, NAMI really has two jobs. One is to educate people, and the other is to eradicate the stigma and discrimination and prejudice that goes along with the diseases. We teach people how to deal with the disease. We teach them about the illnesses, the brain chemistry, the medications, the history of mental illness, nonviolent communication, prognoses, and about all the resources that are available.
And But I was mentioning to the listeners that Catherine Zeta-Jones is in the news today because her publicist sent an email late yesterday that she has checked into a mental health facility for treatment of her bipolar condition, which is bipolar 2.
And yeah, there are a whole range of diagnoses, and I kind of look at it as a scale. I mean, the three major mental illnesses are schizophrenia, bipolar, and major depression. But there are, you know, variations on that theme. As a matter of fact, one of the reasons I got involved with NAMI is because my son has schizophrenia, and he has symptoms that equate to all of the major mental illnesses, even though, you know, his diagnosis is schizophrenia.
So where does personalities disorder fall in? Is that under the umbrella that you just mentioned, the three?
Some of the personality disorders are PTSD, for instance, post-traumatic stress syndrome, there are several that fall under personality disorders, but really it has to do with brain chemistry. And if you think about it, we're really all on the scale somewhere. Who doesn't get depressed or have anxiety? Mm-hmm. Or, you know, I'm a skier. I jump off the corner of the mammoth and people go, mania. So, you know, and so we're really all on the scale. People have situational depression. When my mom died, I was depressed mm-hmm. for a long time, you know. And if you have certain things that you run into in life, you're going to be anxious. You're going to be depressed. I always got anxious before an exam in school, mm-hmm. you know.
Mm-hmm. I remember Sunday afternoons getting a pit in my stomach knowing that school was starting the next day.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. You know, there's a little anxiety there. There's no question about that.
So how does one know?
Go ahead.
How does one know that one is within the range of normal, if you will, because we all experience emotions, and that it's gone a little bit too far? Where does that line get drawn?
It's really difficult, and you know, psychiatrists and therapists determine this by behavior. There's actually a medical, the DSM-4. It's diagnostics, and your behavior determines what category you fit into, okay? Bipolar, which they used to call manic depressive, obviously you have extreme highs and extreme lows. Depression, you have extreme lows. My son, with schizophrenia, he has anxiety, he has depression, he has mania, he has psychosis, which really sort of defines schizophrenia. And psychosis is a break. Your mind is in two places at once. The doctors say what he has is attending to stimuli.
Is what?
Attending to stimuli.
Attending to stimuli.
Yeah, he hears voices. He sees things that I don't even like to say that they're not there, because for him, it's very real, you know. And so the behavior that you present is how they determine what your diagnosis is. I mean, it took over a year and a half for the doctors to come up with a diagnosis for my son. He was diagnosed with bipolar 1, rapid cycling bipolar, schizoaffective disorder. Finally, after observing him for a year and a half, they said, well, really, he's kind of classic schizophrenia.
But you mentioned at the outset of our conversation that it's about brain chemistry and a brain chemistry imbalance. Does that not mean that there's a test that you can do to study that?
There really is no test. And this is the hard part, because, you know, and especially with children, doctors don't like to label people. They don't like to say this child has bipolar or ADD or ADHD. Actually, ADD is kind of a misnomer. It's ADHD. They don't like to do that, but they will observe, and they will talk, and one of the problems with my son is he has an explanation for it all, mm-hmm. you know? He rationalizes everything.
So I would imagine they also have to be cooperative, because in order to be analyzed, they have to show up.
That they have to show up, and they have to be honest, which, interestingly, my son is very honest, although one of the questions, when you take someone to an emergency room, for instance, when they're psychotic, they'll ask questions, are you hearing voices? And my son's answer is, well, not any more than anyone else.
Mm-hmm. Doesn't everyone?
Yeah. Well, we all, and that's another thing. We all get songs stuck in in our head. You know, I listen to Robert Plant once in a while in my head.
Mm-hmm.
So, but because his chemistry is, brain chemistry is different, what he hears, sometimes the voices that he hears are threatening and angry and demeaning. And so he's very frustrated. It's very frustrated. I like to wonder sometimes what's going on inside of his head. And I go, maybe I don't really want to know, you know?
Yeah.
Because it can be frustrating, frightening, and very disconcerting.
Well, I would imagine it's exhausting because it's unrelenting.
It is unrelenting. And medication helps. Medication is a great tool. It lowers his paranoia. It reduces the voices. But they never really go away.
Mm-hmm. So tell us about the event. And because obviously, NAMI, this is you're a fundraiser, and this is how you're able to stay in existence, and this is how you're able to offer your services. And is
Once a year, usually in May, we have a walk. It's a walkathon, and this year it's going to be held May 4th, this coming Saturday. And we're raising funds for the classes that we give. We give presentations to the police department. We do CIT training, crisis intervention training for them. I do presentations for the psych departments at all the close by universities. But the classes that we hold for people, for both family members and for, we call them clients or consumers, it's all free to the public.
Mm.
So once a year we have this fundraiser that helps us keep our office going. We have a hotline. Actually, you can call in Ventura County. You can call 555-NAMI and get help if you have a problem with someone with mental illness.
You know, is that an 805 prefix?
805. 555-NAMI.
And what are the letters, I mean the numbers for those letters?
Oh, let's see. That would be...
Yeah, because not everybody's phone works that way.
Yeah. 6264.
Excellent. So we'll post that on the website, too. And also,
that'd be great.
Your website information is?
NAMIVentura.org.
Okay. So Saturday, how can people get involved?
Oh, you can come. You can sign up. We have all kinds of information. We're actually having a 5K walk, and you can make a donation. You can just come out and enjoy the beautiful Ventura sunshine. We're hoping it's going to be a beautiful day. Usually it is.
And where is it?
It is at just down by the Ventura Pier, where the big hotel, I can't think of the name of it.
Crown Plaza.
Yeah, it used to be Holiday Inn.
Right.
Now it's Crown Plaza.
Right.
Right in front of the Crown Plaza along the boardwalk there.
Is where you're going to be starting the walk.
That's where we'll be starting the walk. The event starts at 9. The walk will probably be about 10:30 or so. And we have teams from all over the county sign up, and they're all wearing their team T-shirts, and last year we had about 1,000 people. We're expecting as many as 1,500 this year.
Nice.
Thank you. Thank you for having me on.
You're welcome. And how do people register to walk or to donate on the website?
They can donate on the website. It's fast, easy, and secure, or they can come sign up. There will be a registration booth. You can write us a check, and we'll be happy to have you walk with us.
So you're saying you have walk-ins for the 5K walk?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and how much does it cost?
Absolutely. Well, the walk is really free. We're just asking for donations.
Oh, I see.
If you want to become a NAMI member, it's $35 a year.
Okay. So $35 is the minimum for to become a member of NAMI, but obviously if somebody's listening and they want to donate, they can click to donate on the website. And you have a team, right, Dwayne?
I do. It's called Love Stories.
Love Stories.
And we've been walking together now for about 6 years. This is about the 9th annual walk. And every year it gets bigger and better, and we're able to help more and more people.
And if folks are listening and they're not in Southern California and can't make it to Ventura, are there other events like this for the chapters around the state and the country?
Yes, if you go to the NAMI.org website, which is the parent website,
mm-hmm.
or NAMI Ventura, if you just go to NAMI.org, you can find a walk in your local area. Absolutely.
And in terms of your son, what's the prognosis? How are things?
Well, he has been on several occasions. He's been homeless. Right now he's living out in Ojai, and he's renting a room out there, and he's looking for, he wants to actually have his own little place where he can, he's vegan, okay? And one of the components of many of the different diagnoses is a religiosity component. You know, you've heard of people who think God is talking to them. Mm-hmm. And actually, you know, if you think about it, in the Old Testament, people who heard voices were called prophets. But he's looking for a place where he can actually grow his own stuff, his own vegetables.
Mm-hmm.
And fruit.
Now, is he able to be employed?
No. And he's got all kinds of reasons for that. You know, he has no job. He's tried going to school. He has few friends. He has no car. But he's got a long medical history, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And so he rationalizes it, and he believes that, you know, he's been persecuted, and his paranoia makes him think that he's just had this terrible, terrible life. When in fact, things actually are pretty good for him. He lived in Ventura for about 3 years in a mobile home and was doing real fine there, and his symptoms got a little worse, and he was evicted from there, so he rents rooms from people until they can't tolerate his behavior anymore.
And how was it as a parent? Because obviously you can't sever that relationship in general. You're always going to be his dad, but growing up,
I take care of him the best that I can. I always take him to the farmers markets every week, and I see him, I talk to him, and his life is actually not that bad. But like I said, on several occasions he's been homeless, and he really, people go, well, why don't you let him live with you? Well, his behavior kind of prevents that.
Mm-hmm.
He gets angry and frustrated, and he can become violent.
Mm. And when he was growing up, was that the case as well, or does it get exacerbated with age?
No, it actually, schizophrenia, the onset of schizophrenia usually happens at about the age, for men, college age, 19, 20, for women, a little later, 22, 24, and it's believed that, you know, when your brain starts to mature, the onset of the disease occurs. Now, with bipolar and depression, that can happen at any time. That can happen to children. That can happen to adults late in life. But schizophrenia typically starts around 19. So when he got sick, it was a huge mystery for me. I had no clue about mental illness. And I found NAMI, and I've been teaching classes and doing presentations. And it's my advocacy factor, and it helps me deal with it. So, but when he was younger, there were no problems at all. As a matter of fact, he's extremely bright. He speaks three languages and plays seven or eight musical instruments.
Oh, my goodness.
And growing up, you know, he did well in school. He was very bright. He was very outgoing and friendly. And it was a shock. It was a shock when it hit.
I can't imagine. And then I'm sure there must be grieving because of who he was and who he is.
Of course. And someday, I hope, you know, with medication, he doesn't like the medication. The medication is, and most people who have used psychotropic medications, antipsychotic medications, they don't like them because they have terrible side effects. However, it's a trade-off, you know, it's mm-hmm. a cost-benefit situation, and he just does not take the medication, and I can't force him.
Right.
I've played MedTop, and it's just not a fun job.
So he's in charge of his own health, then?
Yes, he is. And I wish there were a way to get him treated, but really, for good reason. You wouldn't want to be forced into some kind of treatment if you didn't believe you were ill. And part of his diagnosis is a thing they call anosognosia, which means he doesn't have capacity to recognize that he's ill.
Unbelievable.
And so you can't force someone to be medicated. And it always raises questions because people will say, when you think about the recent events, even as far back as 99 with Harris and Klebold and Columbine,
mm-hmm.
and, you know, Cho Sung and Sung Hui and Virginia Tech and Jared Loeffner and James Holmes and Adam Lanza, there's not a whole lot that you can do to force someone into treatment. And my son, because of his history, he's totally disabled. He gets Social Security payments, and that's what he lives on. It's not much, but it keeps him going.
Well, but Dwayne, we've run out of time. I want to thank you for sharing your story, and we'll post all the information that you've shared with us, and good luck with the walk on Saturday. I might be able to join, which would be fun for me. If you can't listen live, we post the podcast on themariasanchezshow.com. Thank you so much for joining us. We'll see you tomorrow. Thank you for listening to the Maria Sanchez Show on LA Talk Radio and mariasanchezshow.com. Live every weekday morning, 9 a.m. Pacific, and on the net at latalkradio.com and mariasanchezshow.com.